Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, June 5th. It was another horrible week in the markets, the pain of which was softened only by one of those absurd rallies midweek until Friday's swoon. There was no other way around it. Friday's jobs report was one of the worst in years. If you're wondering what I'm talking about, when you heard that we added 431,000 jobs and the unemployment rate ticked down from 9.9 to 9.7%, understand the entire increase was pretty much a result of low-paying government temp positions such as census workers. The private sector created a mere 41,000. Pitiful for what some have been trying to convince us was a brisk recovery. Yet for some crazy reason, President Obama and his sidekick Joe Biden trumpeted the jobs figures not just Friday, but earlier in the week as well, because, incredibly, they didn't think it worthwhile to separate temp work from good full-time positions. This year is actually now playing out exactly as I forecast it would. The economy will be weaker in the second half than the first, and we will be roiled with one geopolitical event after another. What we saw in the Middle East this week being a prime example of the latter, but also the mess on the Korean Peninsula and the ongoing Iranian nuclear situation. But let's take a look at further specifics. In the U.S., Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke clearly wasn't surprised by Friday's employment data. Earlier, he told an audience he was concerned about the toll that long-term joblessness is taking on Americans. High unemployment imposes heavy costs on workers and their families, as well as on our society as a whole, he said. Bernanke added he was very concerned that credit remains tight in terms of small business and job creation. But two regional Fed bank presidents talked about the need to raise interest rates despite the lousy jobs picture. Kansas City's Thomas Honig said, "With the improvements in market conditions and liquidity, and with an improving outlook, the FOMC, Federal Reserve Open Market Committee, would be prepared to raise the funds rate target to 1% by the end of summer." Now, if he's talking about giving savers, particularly seniors, a slight break, fine. I'm all for that line of reasoning. I believe it's a crime that those of us with decent cash piles, let alone retirees, have to stretch for yield and take unnecessary risk. But if Honig really thinks the economy is just Jim Dandy, and that's the reason for the hike, he's a loon. Or he doesn't believe that global events can drastically influence sentiment, which almost always trumps fundamentals. I don't doubt there have been some decent economic figures, including this week where we learned April construction spending rose 2.7%, but then the May employment report showed a decline in construction jobs. Retailers, except Walmart, announced their same-store sales figures for May, and they were generally a little better than expected, but still putrid. Like up 1.3% for Target and up 1.4% for Macy's. Oh, they blame the late Memorial Day weekend, but we were still talking comparisons with a year earlier when, of course, the economy was in far worse shape, and this is the best they can do. So then Walmart, which doesn't release same-store figures anymore, said on Friday that they continue to see pressure on their customer base and that they would keep slashing prices to get them back. Overseas, Europe is struggling and will continue to, with Hungary's new government, a la Greece, talking of how the previous administration cooked the books, leaving the country in a, quote, grave situation. Broadly speaking, in Europe, it's about spending cuts, reducing social services, pensions, and slashing public sector salaries. Easier said than done. Take the case of raising the retirement age. When I heard Ireland and Britain hiked it to 68, I thought, gee, that's a solid first step. Then I read the fine print. Try 68 by 2028 and 2046, respectively. We have a long, long way to go before we'll know if Europe can get its house in order. These are incredibly wrenching changes governments must implement, and you'd have to be an idiot to think the people will just take it all lying down, even though that would be totally appropriate given the binge they've been on. And I haven't even talked about rolling over the massive amounts of debt that each has accumulated. So you have a European continent that could be stuck in neutral at best for years, nay, decades. You also have an Asia that's cooling. With regards to China, I nailed it last week in identifying a topic that was all the discussion by Tuesday, the wage increases at troubled tech contractor Foxconn and a large Honda parts factory. In both cases, worker unrest over pay and labor conditions led to large salary increases, 33% at Foxconn and 20% at Honda, the latter deal finally enough to break a two-week strike. Understand that in China, labor unions are prohibited, but protests are tolerated, thus far. But as one who has a sizable position in a Chinese chemical biodiesel outfit, I'm as concerned about margins as anyone else, and while the Chinese government by week's end was scrambling to come up with a new living wage policy, the sudden move to avoid civil unrest and address the pay issue certainly doesn't help corporate profitability. But the debate over income distribution, as the gap between rich and poor widens to historic levels here, is at the top of the Communist Party agenda these days. Before leaving the topic of China, two other points. There's been much talk over the years concerning the official economic data. Well, the commie leadership has heard you. Three government departments have launched a massive nationwide investigation into key numbers such as GDP, industrial production, and income. Violations will be dealt with toughly, according to one Chinese paper. A law stamping out false data actually went into effect a year ago, but compliance has been questionable. But this new emphasis is good. Also good, especially if you invest in China, is the forecast of the World Bank's chief economist, who says China will still grow between 9 and 10% this year after an overheated first quarter. But aside from the wage issue, China is dealing with a property sector that is frozen up owing to the government's placing one restriction after another on those looking to buy a home or second or third in order to prevent a bubble. The actions have worked. The issue now is, do property prices collapse, slowly decline, or just level off? I do have to throw in another factoid for those who say the Chinese property situation is similar to that in the U.S. Hardly. The ratio of housing loans to GDP is 15.3% in China compared to 79% at the peak in the U.S. Just a few other tidbits concerning Asia. While South Korea's and Taiwan's purchasing managers' indexes were solidly positive in May, 56.4 and 57.4 respectively, they were down from April's torrid pace. And in Japan, you had another change in government, which, while the market reacted pretty well to it, the elevation of Nato Kan to succeed Yukio Hatoyama isn't a particularly good thing, when one of the reasons for his departure, a political funding scandal inside the DPJ, doesn't go away when the DPJ remains in power. Lastly, we have the BP oil spill disaster. Appearing on CNN's Larry King, President Obama said he is, quote, furious at this entire situation. Somebody didn't think through the consequences of their actions. No kidding. Everyone in the country was thinking that about a week after we realized that eventually we'd be watching pictures of oil-drenched pelicans. We're all furious, Mr. President, which was the mood you failed to tap into until now. I've watched the same coverage and interviews you all have, and what's most upsetting is what an LSU professor said on ABC's This Week last Sunday. We know we have this huge spill, so why, since day one, weren't ships all over the blast site skimming up the oil as it hit the surface? Why weren't we doing more to attack it at its source? This same professor said he was out in a significant patch of oil and not a boat was in sight, not a skimmer around. Again, a large portion of our problems, save for the underwater plumes we hear about, could have been resolved with a huge effort at the source. It's been about containment. While President Obama can in no way be blamed for the spill itself, he can be faulted for failing to take charge in the containment efforts. Even Colin Powell said the administration must, quote, demonstrate that it's doing everything that it can do, adding the president did his press conference 3 weeks too late. Powell is normally loath to criticize anyone in his retirement years. It could impact his $100,000 speaking fees, after all. George Will, in addressing the issue of presidential leadership, summed it up. The handling of the spill's aftermath strikes at the narrative of competence. Two other points. The United States BP has had 760 violations in its refinery operations. The next company has 8. That's from the Washington Post. And heaven forbid there's a major hurricane in the area of the blowout before the relief wells are finished, because it could easily destroy any containment efforts taken before then. If this were to be the case, then the most dire scenarios concerning the health of the Gulf of Mexico could indeed come to fruition. I also have to add, Mr. President, that when you fly down to the region, it wouldn't be that hard to make a quick stop on Bourbon Street, have a beer, and be filmed listening to a band as a way of promoting tourism. I'd ask you to go to the World War II Museum as well, but you wouldn't get it. Stocks tumbled to four-month lows, the lowest weekly close for the Dow since last October, as it finished under 10,000. As concerns over the strength of the recovery on the heels of the jobs report plus the ongoing European currency crisis slapped around any investor foolish enough to go back into waters with a glistening sheen. On Friday, while the Dow was plummeting 324 points, 497 of the S&P 500 lost ground. PIMCO's Mohammed El-Erian said, quote, investors should keep their seatbelts on and tight. Personally, if I was a passenger, I'd fling myself out onto the shoulder and hope for nothing more than a broken ankle before the driver takes the two of you over a cliff. I forgot last time to include a little tidbit from Joe Granville, who is still kicking and penning a newsletter. Only because of who he is would I include his musings, but about 2 weeks ago, Granville wrote that between now and into 2011, he expects the Dow to break the 3909 low of 6547, and then it's a free fall. Quote, what I see then is the worst decline in history, close quote. Now, how could I not have this down for the record? Conversely, the average of 13 equity strategists that Bloomberg tracks maintain the S&P 500 will finish the year at 1268. That's all for this week. I'll be back with you next Saturday. Have a great one. And for further details, including all the news on Israel, the flotilla, and the crisis in the Middle East, log on to stocksnews.com and click on the Week in Review. Take care.